It's now time for Talkin' Boxing with Billy C. It began as a podcast, went live on the net, and transformed into a full-blown empire. It's the only daily boxing talk show on the planet, hosted by the only guy with the balls to do it. Many have stepped into the ring. Many have tried to take the belt. And one by one, they've fallen. Another victim of the undisputed heavyweight champion of Boxing Talk Radio. Talkin' Boxing with Billy C is on now.
My style is impetuous, my defense is impregnable, and I'm just ferocious. I want your heart.
And coming to you live from the Billy C Studios in Lake George, New York. I'm Bill Caligero, and it's time for the Billy C Show. Good morning to everybody, or good evening, or good afternoon, whenever you're listening. I want to give a special shout out to all of our viewers on Fight TV. And if you don't have Fight TV on your phone or any other handheld, don't forget to download our app today. Just go to fight.tv. That's F-I-T-E. Go to fight.tv/Billy C. fight.tv/Billy C and download our app. Today's show is being brought to us in part by Sal's Neighborhood Pizzeria and Italian Restaurant, located in beautiful St. Simons Island, Georgia. Check out the website, www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com, or give my man a call, 912-268-2328, 912-268-2328. Find out why I think that Sal's Italian Cuisine is the best on the planet. And don't forget, if you're in the Brunswick area and listen to our show on WGIG and you haven't tried Sal's, what the hell are you waiting for, man? Go to Frederica. That's right. Go to Frederica Drive in St. Simons. Go to the website, get the directions, and get a pizza today. www.salsneighborhoodpizzeria.com. Today's show is also being brought to us in part by Gawk Box. What's that? Oh, you want free stuff? Go check out Gawk Box. Best way to do it, go to our website, www.billycboxing.com, and click on the Gawk Box banner, which is on the left-hand side. Don't forget about Fire Fan. It's called Fire Fan. It's a, hey, you like fantasy sports? It covers all sports. It's unique. Check it out, man. Sign up today through us for free and win money. Hey, what's better than signing up through us for free and then get a chance to win money? Cost you nothing and you can win something. Just go to our website, www.billycboxing.com, and click on the Fire Fan banner, which is right there on the left. And finally, today's show is being brought to us in part by my book, Tom Molyneux, From Bondage to Baddest Man on the Planet, is available right now where all great books are sold. And you can get a copy right now while you're watching or listening to the show. All you got to do is go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. Listen, you get looking for a signed copy? Don't worry about it. I'll hook you up. All you got to do is visit the website, www.billycboxing.com, and click on the book club section and follow the directions. I just want to give everybody a heads up. We are still going through some learning/growing pains with our new systems that we have in place. So bear with us. We should have all the bugs worked out, I would think, by the next show. And we hope to get that pretty quickly. But there was some great fights on ESPN Saturday night. Man, what a fight card we got to see. I love it. I mean, two very, I thought, competitive fights. The one fight went the distance. The second fight didn't. I love the content of the event, especially the co-main event with Mercito Gesta taking on Gilberto Gonzalez. Went the distance. Gesta comes out the victor. 30 wins, one loss, and a couple of draws now when he scored a 10-round unanimous decision over Gonzalez, who was never out of the fight and actually dropped Gesta once. The way the judges scored it, 99-91, 98-92, 96-93. Opening the ESPN Golden Boy fight card. And then the main event was in the ranked two undefeated fighters. Antonio Orozco scores a fourth-round stoppage over previously unbeaten Keandre Gibson, who drops to 16-1-1. The official time was 1 minute and 31 seconds of that one. A right hand and then a delayed dropping of Gibson stopped that fight. I loved the card. One thing I didn't love about it was the commentating, and I will get into that in 1 second. But joining us right now, all the way from beautiful St. Simons Island, Georgia, he's a New Jersey Boxing Hall of Famer. He's a Guinness Book of World Record holder, and he also can flip a pizza from here to the moon and back. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, please welcome the one, the only, Sal Rocky Senicola. What's up, Sal?
Good morning, Bill. How are you today, pal?
Oh, not too bad. The sun, she's a shine in here. So it looks good.
That's a great. Is it above 30?
It's supposed to get above 30 today, my man. Anyway, you know, I'd like to. Yeah. So the canvas size on the output screen is not adjusted correctly. So we apologize for that. Sal's is, but mine isn't. And you know, like I said, we got some growing pains here with the new system, Sal. So we're working these bugs out. I'm trying to get the right setup, but the definition is much better. But the screenshot that they're getting of me. Not you drinking your coffee, rolling your eyes at me, but the screenshot right here. Yeah. Hey, what's that, a Billy C mug? You know,
it's a Billy C mug, a personal Billy C mug.
There you go. But anyway, let me get people caught up real quick on some Major League Baseball scores, because that's what I want to do. The baseball season is upon us. We had three games yesterday. Unfortunately for you, Sal, the Rays topped the Yankees 7-3. Behind 13 hits and one error, Chris Archer gets the W for the Rays. The Yankees, they had 9 hits and an error, and Mashiro Tanaka picks up the loss. The second game to kick off the Major League Baseball season, the Diamondbacks came from behind and beat the Giants 6-5 on 13 hits. Fernando Rodney gets the win, and Mark Melancon picks up the loss for the Giants, who had 11 hits and no errors. And finally, the Cardinals topped the World Series champs 4-3. 11 hits, no errors for the Cards, and 8 hits and no errors for the Cubbies. Swing Hwan Oh gets the win for the Cardinals, and Mike Montgomery picks up the loss for the defending World Series champion. And Sal, did you get a chance to watch the fights on ESPN Saturday night?
Bill, I'll tell you what, I'm going to watch them today. We got slammed this weekend, and I was all alone tossing pies, and it was a nightmare. I mean, not a nightmare, it was great, but we just got slaughtered just with, you know, we go through the whole month of March and the first week of April of getting all the spring breakers from colleges locally on tri-state area down here, Florida, Georgia, Carolinas, and they all come to the island. And believe me, all we're doing is prepping and cooking and serving. We're like a machine. That's it.
Well, the fight card was a great one for the two fights that they broadcast on ESPN. When you watch the fights themselves, it was fantastic. I loved every minute of it. Well, let me rephrase that. I loved every minute of the fights. I didn't like any minute of the commentating. We had the two Bernards, Bernard Osuma from ESPN and Bernard Hopkins. And you know, it's to me, and no disrespect, but and he's probably pronouncing the names the way you know, the way they want them to be pronounced. Right. But you know, when I'm watching a fight and Osuma is doing the commentating, he does a decent job, and he'll say, in this case, a right hand put Orozco in trouble. And he would say it very normally. You know, yeah, he threw a beautiful right hand. And then he mentions the name. He would say, yeah, he threw a right hand. And then Tony Orozco takes a right hand for Keandre Gibson. And then he turns around and then Tony Orozco, you know, I mean, it's like, you know, and then you got Bernard Hopkins speaking, I don't know what language, Sal. Bernard Hopkins, he's like, you know, he'll say a statement like, he move to his right and land both hands, and then that how he got a win, you know. And I'm saying to myself, what, you know, I mean, it, you know, shouldn't it be he moves to the right and lands with both hands, and that's how he's got to win? I mean, I don't get it, Sal. You missed it. So obviously you can't comment on it, but Tony Orozco, I don't get it, man.
Well, I'll tell you what. Maybe they could give us a shot up there, huh? You and I. We'll commentate there and see what happens.
Well, no, I'm not suggesting content, you know, because Bernard Hopkins, I mean, who do you want more than Bernard Hopkins giving you his insight? You know, but there comes a time when, you know, when you're presenting something on television or radio or whatever, I mean, don't, if it's to an mostly English-speaking audience, I just think you got to speak English. I don't know. And like I said, no disrespect. But
no disrespect, but I think you have to be a little more articulate with conveying what your opinion is of the fight. It certainly sounds a little more credible, but, you know, getting his perspective, I think, is very, very valuable, and that's what the network's like, too, you know? So I guess there's trade-offs. And
yeah, but why not make a listen, like I said, like I was starting to say with Bernard Osuna, I mean, okay, maybe I'm in the wrong here. Maybe, you know, Latino, Hispanic-type names like to be, you know, presented and spoken the way he does,
maybe.
Obviously.
Maybe.
But as far as B-Hop is concerned, I mean, listen, the guy is a plethora of boxing knowledge, and I want to hear his comments, but I would like to hear them in English. And why not send them to a speaking class? I mean, anybody else that is in front of a camera, you know, has to, unless they're just a fight guest. And Bernard Hopkins was way more than a fight guest. You know, it wasn't like he was just there for a couple of comments. You know, that you give him a pass. But now it seems like he's moving in to that commentary role. And even as much as Paulie Malignaggi, to me, reminds me of Fran Dresser of The Nanny with his, you know, nasal congested
You're a funny
voice.
Guy this today.
I'm just saying, you know, with at least he speaks English, Sal.
Yeah, Paulie does have some good comments, too. I do note that. But that's a great analogy. I'm going to have to pay attention to that Fran Drescher kind of.
Yeah, all you got to do is watch some of the fights. But, hey, listen, we had
that was a low blow.
We're not going to give you 5 minutes to recover from that. But over in the cruiserweight division, Maris Bredas won the WBC cruiserweight title. Now, if you recall, the WBC made that belt available because they put Tony Bellew as a champion of Muay Thai just so that they could charge a sanctioning fee. And Marco Captain Huck, who is one of my favorite cruiserweights, put in a lackluster snooze fest of a performance, Sal, and Bredas won the title. The way the judges scored at 116-111, 117-110, 118-109, all in favor of Bredas, who rightfully so got it. After the fight, he said, we plan to go for the knockout, but Marco's a strong opponent. And when Marco Captain Huck was asked what he thought, he says, well, perhaps the pressure was too much. He was simply good today. That's the sport. He drops to 40 wins, 4 losses, and a draw. And Bredas remains undefeated, 22-0. What a kind of a who cares kind of a comment. What's your thoughts on that, Sal?
Yeah, I don't like that comment. It's not too good. But I don't know. I think that these guys, like I said, maybe they should all go to a little bit of a delivery communications class. I don't know.
Over in Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
Yeah, we had a local card, and in the heavyweight division, Vinny Carretta took care of Gilberto Matisse Domingos and stopped him. But the co-main event featured a guy that I really liked, Matt Remillard. He got back into the ring after serving some time in the slammer to improve to 24-1 with 13 knockouts when he won a six-round decision over Augustin Morias. Congratulations to Mr. Remillard for coming back. So, anyway, speaking of coming back, Sal, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I got some boxing news to talk about. We got some emails. And we're even going to try to get Dax Khan on the line in about 20 minutes or so. So don't go anywhere, ladies and gents. We'll be right back.
The Billy C. Morning Show will be right back.
Have you heard? Proactiv Plus is faster and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin? Acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv Plus, your acne can heal, and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited-time offer. Give us a call at 800-567-0214, because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv Plus risk-free and get two free gifts, and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactiv Plus now, and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv Plus, two free extras, and free shipping. Call 800-567-0214. This is our exclusive radio offer, never on TV. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv Plus with free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Don't wait. Call 800-567-0214. That's 800-567-0214.
Check out BillyCBoxing.com now, or feel the wrath of the mighty mustache.
Oh, that hurts. Why are you doing that to my face? I hate you. I hate you.
That's BillyCBoxing.com. Consider this your warning. Now, back to the Billy C. Morning Show. Interact with the show at BillyCBoxing.com.
And we're back. You're listening to the Billy C. Show. Glad you could be with us this morning or whenever you're watching. And we apologize for the, you know, if I see the nothing gets past them guys in the chat room mentioning that the screen is small. One more time. As a matter of fact, I'm not going to see it because I just left the chat room. But yeah, gotcha. We know that my screen is small. But that's because we're messing around with some resolution qualities and stuff like that. And we are going through some growing pains with our new systems that we have in place. But I promise you, by the end of this week, you're going to see some great stuff, including full commercial shots of video. And some we're going to be able to incorporate video clips. If we want to watch a knockout or something like that, we'll be able to incorporate video clips. So we got a lot of good stuff going on, Sal. Say what? I had you muted. Sorry.
Can you hear me?
Oh yeah, it wasn't you. It was the button I had pressed.
What'd you say? You know what? You can control the media with pushing a button.
Tell you what, there's so many things. I got to do the show. I got to produce the show. I got
to the show. You can do it all. Just don't have one of those private test runs again.
No. I just want to give a special shout out to my producer who's not here, Jeremy. Appreciate it, my man. But we have some things I want to talk about in news, and then I got some emails to read. Then we're going to try to get Dax on, but. Miguel Kessler, on Friday. Now, I didn't mention this on Friday because I wanted to digest this a little bit, Sal. But Miguel Kessler, former world champ, sitting on a record of 46-3 with 35 knockouts. He has been retired, but he announced that he's returning to the ring and he's coming back. He officially announced it on Friday, And he had this to say. He said, I want to prove that I can become the best again. The goal is to become world champion for the sixth time. I've always said that if I wake up one day and the motivation is there, I'll take the chance. And now that timing's right. I still have a great team around me. And I want to get your thoughts on this in a second, Sal. I got a great team around me. My chef, my physical trainer, my therapist, and a boxing coach. The desire is there, and I'm ready to make it happen. I'm older, so is my body, but I've kept in shape, and I still make weight. I'm 100% motivated to do this. I miss some training. I miss the training camps. I miss the focus you get from boxing. I have one goal, and mine is to be world champion for a sixth time. First and foremost, I want to get your thoughts on, before you go, I want you to give me your thoughts on coming back. Obviously, you know, you came back after a much longer time, but, you know, once the boxing bug bites you, it's hard to walk away, and it appears that that's what's happening to Mikael Kessler. Do you think he's doing the right thing by making a comeback?
Well, again, and how old is he?
He's in his mid 30s. I don't have his exact age.
He's relatively, you know, it's so funny. When I was active as a fighter, when you were in your mid 30s, you were old, washed up, and you were an opponent or journeyman, as we use that term. Today, it's almost a staple, you know, as far as, you know, you entering the ring, your late 20s, early 30s, you're just at your peak and your prime, which theoretically, as long as your mind and your body is not abused at a younger age, you can sustain and actually peak out in your mid-30s. I believe that. So for him to undergo and rediscover the motivation that's going to put him back in a ring, that's great. But as far as his alignment of a team, you know, yeah, you do have to have somebody that could keep you on track with your nutrition, sure. And if you need a little Boudini Brown, was that the guy?
Well, I wanted to kind of make that separate, but and that's because my whole point with that is the fact that it appears that, you know, today's boxers and you know, the team used to consist of the fighter, the trainer, maybe one assistant, and that's it. Now, according to Kessler, you know, he's got a personal chef, he's got a physical trainer, he's got a therapist, and of course the boxing coach. I mean, what do you think about all those guys? I mean, is it really needed? Have we become weak that we need a therapist as part of our team? I mean, what's up with that?
You know, if you need somebody to put in your head that you're good, you're going to be the best, you're going to be great, you're going to be fine, don't worry about this, don't worry about that, I mean, it's already over the hill. It's too late, because, you know, that's part of the whole mantra of being a fighter. You know, you feel, if it is to be, it's up to me, you know, and God above, whichever God you pray to, but it's either, there is one, it's just different forms of religion that we're not going to get into, that have their message.
And why? You sure you don't want to get into religion and maybe talk a little politics too? I mean, come on.
Wait, ex-nay. Listen, I'll tell you what. One of the first two fighters that started bringing in what you used to just see most of the fighters have was one trainer. You had a cut man, a trainer, and your manager or additional cornerman. And that was your game. That was your team. You know, if you have a team. And, you know, it's so funny, all the interviews, well, we'll do this, we'll do that. But guess what? You're going to do that. I'm going to do this. And the bottom line is, but that's how it used to be. You had your trainer. If you have too many people stirring the pot and you're listening to too many people that are not on the same page, you might get a little bit confused, and you're going to need a therapist. I'm teasing. But the ones that broke out of that norm, I think it was Evander Holyfield and it was Michael Spinks, when they were putting on the pounds through physical conditioning and training and maybe some weightlifting. They added that dimension. If you remember and go back that far, those were the first two notable fighters that brought additional people into their team or camp, aside from just a trainer and a manager. They brought these strength training coaches, or they brought a nutritionist to help pack on good solid muscle weight. because they were smaller guys coming up in weight. That's it. But now, you know, if you have a team that you're amassing, you just got to be careful that you're not going to be listening to everybody, and they're going to be contradicting what one person says as far as style or conditioning or gym. It's got to be all on the same page, like a medical team.
Well, we'll see. Training. We'll see what happens with Mr. Kessler.
Yeah, I wish him luck.
I thought you know, me personally, I thought he was. And don't get mad at me, all you Danish fans, especially you cheese Danish fans. But I thought he was a bit overrated. But anyway, let me move on. Guillermo Rigondeaux and Moises Flores are avoiding purse bid for the WBA Super Bantamweight title that Rigondeaux holds. Apparently, both sides reached an agreement. And we will keep you posted on the actual date and location of that fight. Also, you know, people talk about, you know, fighters. Recently, Chocolito Gonzalez lost his bid to get to 49 and possibly 50-0 when he lost his first fight a couple of weeks ago. Well, there's another world champion out there in the minimum weight, Wahing Meothian, and he's currently at 46-0 because this past weekend he beat his Southpaw opponent, Jay Server Abicidi, in that fight. His title was not on the line. So he's at 46-0, soon to try to make a run for that elusive 50-0 mark as well. It was also announced over the weekend that Robert Herlinas, a heavyweight, I'm sitting here looking at my notes and holding it up in front of me, a heavyweight, 24-1 with 15 knockouts, is going to be taking on his arch rival over in England anyway, his English arch rival, I should say, Derek Chisora, who's 26-7. The fight will be taking place on May 27th in Finland. All I'm going to say, Sal, I mean, I know they're heavyweights, and I know that they don't really have to make weight per se, but both of these guys look like they haven't passed a buffet line in quite a while. I mean, I know they got a while to get in shape, but I know how you feel. I mean, when you see a fighter that's active and he's out of shape, what does that do to you?
Well, it makes me, if I see my opponent who's active and out of shape, I'm gonna try and take him out and go bang to the body and bam. But yeah, it's upsetting because, you know, you're a professional and you're supposed to, you know, I was always told, always try to stay in shape. And sure, I would go up sometimes 20 pounds in between fights, one time 30 pounds in between fights. And it's mostly water. It's like the incentive reward. You know, you tear off 20, 30 pounds or 20 pounds. They get down to lightweight. I was 160. I'd have to get down 135. And then I'd get a chance. Hey, I love ice cream. I love steak. I love this and that. You eat a whole weekend and you gain that fluid, that weight. And then, you know, you wake up to reality, you start peeling it off, and you keep yourself in shape. And, you know, some of my trainers, Don Turner, and they always said, you keep yourself in shape so you can turn it around 3 to 6 weeks anytime and be ready to fight. And, I, you know, that's pretty much how we carry ourselves. These guys, yeah, if they're heavy and they're heavyweights, they feel, you know, they may have the opportunity or ability to put on pounds. It's not going to matter because they don't have to touch a scale. But what it should matter is that you literally, in a fight game, I'm telling you, every athlete will find this out, whatever career they chose or whatever field or sport they're in. Your food is your fire. It's your fuel. And I learned that at a young age. What you are, literally, is what you eat. And you know what? You want to use sugar, staples, and junk food and everything else. Yeah, your body's going to perform like that. You want to put it in with a high-test fuel, you know, your proteins, your lean carbs and everything else, and tissue. You know, everything else. You stress the body, you rest the body, and it comes into balance of what you put in your body and consume as nutrition. It's really that complicated. So when you see a guy out of shape and wants to go to every buffet, yeah, I don't respect that too much if you're an active fighter.
Well, if Robert Helenis is basically, you know, is fire, eats, you know, builds a fire. He's an inferno, man, because he's a fat pig right now. But
well, and not only that, though, Bill, but these fighters, they're smart enough to remember and see which fight or how their condition, when they felt the best or how they performed in a ring. And if they knew that, hey, I remember when I fought this guy, I trained like this. It's incredible. I documented. I was my own chef for my own camp, unless I went away to training camp, I still ate properly. But I ate complex carbohydrates, lean protein, and even some fats. It was a ratio that I adhered to. And I'll tell you what, I could punch bell to bell for 10 rounds, and I did the running. I did the sprints. I did the intervals. I did the fartlek. That's just it, conditioning. In fact, one day I want to take on a fighter, and I want to train him and implement some of my training techniques. And I promise you, it'll be I'd like to see if I could duplicate that in another human being.
Well, you got a relative. Hey, you know what? I eat nothing but, pizza, stuff like that. And as everyone can see, I'm shrinking. I mean, yeah, even the photo of me right now, the video shot, it is much smaller. So obviously it's working for me, Sal, you know, but,
let me tell you something. I dropped 10 pounds over the last, 2 weeks. I'm busting my chops. I'm working hard. I'm not eating as much as I normally do because we've just been so busy. And my girlfriend the other day said to me, "Sal, you're looking thinner. You're looking good, but you're also looking a little shorter."
Said, you sure she didn't say, "Hey, Sal, look behind you. I think you got your weight in tow, you know." But anyway, they announced a huge triple header coming our way in May down in Japan. And on May 20th in Tokyo, what a great triple header. First and foremost, which I kind of didn't realize it was vacant because I thought Triple G just beat Daniel Jacobs to pick up the WBA's World Middleweight title. But nay, because the WBA, despite them saying that they're going to, basically combine the titles to get rid of all the BS titles, they're having their vacant WBA World Middleweight title contested as the main event. Hassan Nadam is taking on Ryota Murata. And then also on the card, Dago Higa, who's 12-0 with 12 knockouts. And he's taking on a flyweight champion in Juan Hernandez. And also on that card, Shirio Ken is taking a challenging for the WBC junior flyweight against Gagan Lopez. I love Gagan Lopez, even though I can't pronounce his name right. But I love watching him fight. He's very exciting. So we'll take a look at that. But Sal, I got some emails to read. You ready to give your thoughts on some emails?
I would love to, Bill. And I'm really going to pay attention this time.
You should, because
I'm out of the chat room.
I'm out of the chat room too, because I got sick of watching people go, "Hey, did you know that the video shot of Billy C is really tiny on my screen?" Yeah, we got it. You know, we know.
I don't know when you show me, but
there you go. I love that mug. It kind of looks familiar to me. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a mug. It's a quarter mug.
That's what I love about my friends. That's what I love about my friends. They take care of me. Hey, what's that, a quarter coffee? Hey, talk about, I've only had one cup of coffee a day, Doc. Yeah, well, it's 6 gallons. Look at the size of that thing. But anyway.
This holds 8 cups, pal.
I don't doubt it. But anyway, we got an email. This one's from my man, Mitch. He says, "The winner and still most protected fighter in the world, Adonis Super Chump Chickenson." He says, "I was actually tempted to go to this fight in New York. I guess somebody tipped Al Haymon off that Shawnee Monahan could fight just a little, and they canceled it. Too bad. That's two nice paydays Shawnee got effed out of, first award fight and now this one. Shows the degrees of separation between Ward and Chicken Stevenson. I'll say it, pussies." And I feel your pain, Mitch. The truth of the matter is these fighters today, and although there are some, and I give Keith Thurman credit, I give Sean Porter credit, obviously, There's several others out there that fight the fights. But, man, Sal, there are so many fighters that are so, self-proclaimed or so-called champions that just really cherry-pick their opponents.
Well, they do. I mean, it's like they just look at the land, the lay of the land ahead of them, and they figured, hey, we're going to climb the ladder. It's not a straight ladder. It's like the rungs of the ladder are staggered, or you have to traverse across back and forth. And they looked who they could pick to leverage their fighter for the next best opportunities. Is it totally anti-strategy of the normal path? Well, I think, like we said, a lot of fighters are protected today. A lot of fighters have more than a whole management team and input of this and that and media. And so who the heck knows which pathway one's career is going to take instead of taking the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. It's a little bit choppy today, that's all.
Wait a minute, I thought you skipped class that day. But anyway, we got another email. This was from Joel. He says, hey, Billy C., did you happen to watch the Mayorga versus Zepeda fight from Saturday? He says, honestly, it looks like Zepeda came in to Nicaragua and was paid to take the loss. I don't think Mayorga looked great, but that ending looked like it was something that belonged in a WWE ring and not a boxing ring. What's your thoughts? And if Mayorga can continue fighting bums in his home country for a few bucks, or if he thinks these kinds of victories will make him a star again. I heard that he wants Margarito next. I actually think that's a possible fight that can happen. Two fighters on the senior washed-up circuit fighting each other. Only if Mayorga can make weight. I think both the guys came in over the weekend between 174 and 179 for the fight. He says pathetic. I did watch the fight. And, whether you're a Ricardo Mayorga fan or not, let's be real about Ricardo Mayorga. He was never anything special. He brought some excitement. He was just a wild fighter, a tough opponent because of his wildness. But fighting now in his 40s, he needs money. As far as the end of this particular fight, what happened here and throughout the whole fight, it just looked exactly like Joel described. It looked like two, washed up fighters just going the distance. But at the end, the stoppage, I think that Joel is talking about, I don't know how much you want to criticize the referee, because what happened was it was a punch that landed, I believe, an uppercut, and it put Zepeda in all kind of trouble. And he was clearly hurt by the punch, at least if he was acting. It looked like he was acting well. He was hurt by the punch and turned his back on Mayorga. Now, a lot of times you'll see a referee, tell them and tell them not to turn their back and turn them back around. But in this particular case, the referee waved off the fight, and his reasoning was because the fighter turned his back. I don't know if you can argue. I mean, it was a referee's call. What do you think about that, Sal? I mean, having a referee, having an opponent, turn their back on you heading towards the corner, he looked stunned. Did the referee do the right thing in stopping the fight, or should he, counted it as a knockdown? I mean, what do you think?
I'll tell you what. I probably would have liked to have seen him count it as a knockdown. Say, hey, are you okay? Can you continue to fight? And I'm going to give you a standing eight count. And it would have been 10-8 round. And if the guy wanted to quit, let him drop to a knee or get out, and that would have been it. But the referee might have been able to ask and qualify that instead of just stopping the fight away.
So, Sal, I know you made your comeback fight, your record-breaking fight several years ago, but prior to that, you hadn't fought in 25 years, and I know you know how many days and
63
hours.
63 days and 22 and a half hours.
Yeah, I knew that you knew that. But let me fill you in on a little secret, Sal.
They don't do standing eight counts anymore.
It's shocking, but they don't. I believe they should in certain cases, but they don't. But anyway, but what he could have done, Sal, is he could have just said that he was stunned enough, and when he turned his back, he could have called that a knockdown and basically given him a standing eight, I think.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. He could have. He could have said, hey, even drop to one, see if he's cognizant enough. Hey, drop to one knee. I'm going to give you a standing eight count. That would have been it.
Well, the referee in the fight from ESPN on Saturday night in the Keandre Gibson stoppage, he asked, the referee asked Mr. Gibson if he was okay, and he basically didn't respond quick enough, and the fight was waved off. So, sometimes a fighter doesn't want to say, no, I'm not okay, but by not answering is basically saying,
let me tell you,
I'm not okay.
Yeah, 100% right, Bill, because you know what? A fighter, if he's aware, cognizant of where he is and how he's feeling, guess what? If he still wants to engage in a fight, he's going to say, yeah, I'm fine. Don't stop the fight. I'm fine. I can't continue. Right. Believe me.
We got
I've been in that position. You do that. If you can't, you're going to look for a little way out, and you're not answering, you're not paying attention. Yeah, then a referee's going to say, hey, guess what? You're not here right now.
Right.
We're going to
read one more email, then we're going to take a short break, and we're going to attempt to get Dax Khan on the phone with you, Sal. And if it doesn't work, we're going to hang up on you and get Dax on. But anyway, this final email is from my man Rick, and he says, hey, Billy C and Sal, I'm just curious to know how you would compare the undefeated legacies of Mayweather, Marciano, Ricardo Lopez, or let me say it like Bernardo Osuna, Ricardo Lopez, and Joe Calzaghe. He says, who's O impresses you the most? He says, I'd like to point out that both Mayweather and Calzaghe took on younger, stronger, championship-level opponents when they fought Canelo and Jeff Lacy, and they both took them to school. I don't know of any opponents like that on either of Marciano or Lopez's record. Lopez, I will say that Marciano was in the tougher and more exciting fights. Keep in mind, though, Joe Lewis, 75 years old when he fought him. here's the thing. I disagree about Mayweather and Calzaghe. Mayweather, a decade ago on his rise up, did fight some tough opposition. But since he took the reins of his career, he fought calculated risk opposition. And I don't give him credit for that. Yes, there were some names on that list, of course. He still accomplished an undefeated record of 49-0, so I give him credit for that. But I don't think he went and seeked out the best of the best of the best. Canelo was a young fighter, and I do give Floyd credit for fighting Canelo, but I would give him more credit if he fought him again. At the time he fought Canelo, he saw what I keep telling everybody that I see, and Floyd, boxed a boring fight that won. I mean, I give him credit. As far as Calzaghe is concerned, this is a guy that avoided everybody. I think as much as I was critical of Floyd just a second ago, I give Floyd 10 times more props than Joe Calzaghe. And when Joe Calzaghe fought Jeff Left Hook Lacy, he was without his left hook. He ripped his shoulder apart, and he no longer had the left hook. So I don't give him credit. As far as Ricardo Lopez, this guy, you don't think he fought tough guys, Rick, because he was in such a small weight division. Ricardo Lopez, Little Red Lopez, was a great fighter. I think he fought the toughest opposition of all of the four names that you mentioned. And the one thing I'm going to say about Marciano, and not because he's a paisan, but the fact is that Rocky Marciano fought everyone that was available to him and knocked them out. And the thing about him was people say, oh, well, the division sucked and all of this. Yeah, but you can't blame a fighter for cleaning up a division that wasn't, a great division. You can only blame a fighter for not facing the opposition that we want. And all of the other fighters that you mentioned, with the exception of, well, let me just rephrase it. Mayweather and Calzaghe definitely didn't fight the fights that we wanted at the time. Rocky Marciano did fight all the fights, and quite honestly, a lot of the fighters that people refer to as bums, similar to Joe Lewis's Bum in a Month Club, would all be champions today. So, I think out of the four names, I gave the credit to Ricardo Little Red Lopez for fighting the toughest opposition. What's your thoughts, Sal, Rocky, Senicola?
I will tell you, I share a lot of the sentiments with you. And, you know, you cannot blame a champion or undefeated fighter who is in a division at the time, like we are looking at Marciano, and he's willing to fight anybody and everybody that's the top-ranked contender at the time, you know. And it may not have been the most dominant, strong division in the boxing world at the time, but he didn't run from anybody. And, yes, there are those with the calculated risk. They take on fighters and preserve their records, and they put everything they can do. So, yeah, I see where you're coming from, and I could understand. And, you know, Kawasaki, he was a great fighter, and I thought he tried to do the best job he could as well. I guess so, the opposition they gave him.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that he did. Little Red Lopez fought all the tough opposition.
He did, and Little Red Lopez did. He fought all the top opposition that they threw at him, and he was very good.
The problem with a guy like Little Red Lopez, Ricardo Little Red Lopez, the problem with him is that he fought in such a small division that a lot of fight fans didn't know the opposition, you know, and it's similar to today. Same thing, you know.
Well, that's true, Bill. You know, we've always had the definitive weight classes, the lightweights, the welterweights, the middleweights, the heavyweights, or maybe even light heavyweights. Those were the ones that were mostly paid attention to. And you knew the contenders. You knew what was going on. So, yeah, those little ones, not taken away from anything. Under the radar, sometimes they get past a little bit of things. They don't get the kind of notoriety that the other divisions get. Not for any reason. You got an explosion of talent at those levels. It's just, you know, it's always been that stigma.
Well, listen, boys and girls, we are going to take a short break. When we come back, we're actually going to try and see if we can't see if we haven't fixed one of the glitches that we discovered last week. So we'll be back, I'd say, in about two.
The Billy C. Morning Show will be right back.
Have you heard? Proactive Plus is faster and better than ever. Stay tuned for a million bottle giveaway, and you'll also receive free shipping. Do you have troubled skin? Acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactive Plus, your acne can heal, and you can help prevent new breakouts from happening. Don't miss this limited time offer. Give us a call at 800-567-0214, because we're going to let a million people try Proactive Plus risk-free and get two free gifts and also receive free shipping when you call right now. You heard it. This offer won't last long. So call Proactive Plus now and you'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactive Plus, two free extras, and free shipping. Call 800-567-0214. This is our exclusive radio offer, never on TV. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactive Plus with free shipping. That's right, free shipping. Don't wait. Call 800-567-0214. That's 800-567-0214.
Check out BillyCBoxing.com now or feel the wrath of the mighty mustache.
Oh, that hurts. Why are you doing that to my face? I hate you. I hate you.
That's BillyCBoxing.com. Consider this your warning. Now, back to the Billy C. Morning Show. Interact with the show at BillyCBoxing.com.
And, you know, we're back. That's right. You're listening to the Billy C. Show. Glad you could be with us. And speaking about being with us, we're going to see if we got a glitch done right now. Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you. Not only hear you, but I'm looking at Dax. We're shadowboxing.
Yeah, I'm looking at Sal. I don't see you.
Well, you're not going to see me. Now the question is everybody seeing both of these guys? And I think they are. Now wait, Dax, you got to turn somebody's got their speaker on, so we're hearing it. So if you just mute that, hopefully that won't. Now can we hear you, Dax? See, now Dax can't hear us. Dax, you're gonna See, Sal, what, Dax, you got to put your speaker on. Yeah, so the problem is that we'll fix that we'll for fix you, Dax. But right now you're going to hear me on the video, so I'll just shut up. So, Dax, what do you got cooking for us with social media?
Well, a lot of interesting stuff this weekend. One of the main things that this weekend was a comment made by Jolie Mazon from Main Events, where she had sent out a tweet talking about how does anybody do research anymore before they start talking crap. And I'm guessing that was replying to the situation between Arthur Beterbiev and Sullivan Barrera and why that fight is a no-go. You know, they were scheduled to fight later on this month, but I guess Sullivan Barrera wasn't very much happy with the split. It was supposed to go 75-25 in favor of Beterbiev. They were going to split a $251,000 purse. Main Event failed to win the purse.
Are you there, Sal?
Sorry?
Yeah, you just locked up for a minute. But, Sal, can we still hear you?
You can hear me, and let me know if you want me to try and put mine on mute.
No. I want you to leave it alone. I'll discuss the problem with Dax. It's only on Dax's end. But, Dax... that last part of it froze up for a second. What did you say?
Well, I left off where I was saying, you know, Sullivan Barrera goes online and he sends out on social media that he's not going to fight Arthur Beterbiev. You know, he called that fight off for April 21st. It was supposed to take place in Miami. Now he's going to take on Paul Parker, an 8-1 guy. They're going to fight April 16th at the Mohegan Sun. You know, this is the same guy that lost to a guy that Barrera just beat. I don't understand. Jolie Mazon and Main Event seemed a little bit upset that a lot of fans were criticizing this decision. You know something? They had an opportunity to win the purse bid for this fight, and they didn't. And so what did they do? Now they're mad that the fans aren't happy. Whose fault is this? I just don't understand why these promoters want to get mad when you're sending a guy in there who just fought Andre Ward a year ago, and now you got him going in there against an 8-1 guy because he wasn't happy with the purse split against a guy like Arthur Beterbiev when they had every opportunity in the world to win that purse bid. Who's at fault here?
You know, I agree with you, and I agree with the fans. I know that last week the promoter for Beterbiev, Yvonne Michel and GYM, put out a statement about that fight and why it was canceled and everything else. And, you know, it just goes by what we were saying before we went to break. You know, I think it's crazy that these fighters today really choose the simple route. I mean, it's not fair to the fans, and it's certainly not fair to the sport. So I could see why there's unrest there. What do you think, Sal?
Well, I think so, too. You know, you just hit it. It's true. I mean, you know, the fans are smarter than with some of these promoters assume or take for granted. And you know, the real boxing fans, they definitely know the little bit of the choreograph or the moves or sidestep or what's going on and orchestrated in someone's career. So I agree.
Hey, Dax, there was a great fight card, at least I thought it was a great card, on Saturday night on ESPN. And if we get these types of matchups on ESPN as a norm and not an exception, man, I'm excited about that. What was your thoughts on the two fights that we got to see on ESPN late Saturday night?
We'll start out with Antonio Orozco. I thought, you know, it's time, really, to take a serious look at him. You know, he dominated a semi-decent prospect in Keandre Gibson. You know, a fight against Sergey Lipnitz, with a guy who was undefeated, similar in age, a lot like Orozco, he needs a step-up opponent. That would tell us which one of those two guys are the possible goods. But I really think Antonio Orozco is a guy we need to take a better look at because, you know, he looked sensational this weekend. And I agree. Any more fight cards like that, and you know what? They're really going to surpass what the old Friday night fights were.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't beat that. I mean, both fights were good. And what was your quick thoughts on the stoppage? I thought that the stoppage was right. Keandre Gibson did not respond quick enough, and I thought it was justified. Your thoughts?
You know, if you're not responding quick enough when a referee is talking to you, you know something, the referee has no choice but to stop it. Just like, you know, when talking about the Mayorga fight. You know, you turn your back a little bit. Usually that's a sign you don't want to fight no more. Most guys, when they really want to fight, what are they doing? They're bringing up their hands. They're complaining. They're telling the referee they're okay. We've seen guys that are literally out on their feet telling the referee, I'm okay. So, that's you know, right. that's good stuff.
Well, that's one of the things that a lot of, you know, the referees are being trained to do now. A lot of times fighters went into auto mode and would automatically put their hands up and move forward, even though that they were kind of in danger. That's why we're starting to see fighters go move to the left, move to the right, all that kind of stuff. So I'm glad they're mixing it up. At least they get a better feel, you know, if the fighter's in any kind of danger. But both of those stoppages, I feel that the referees did the right job. Anything else going on in social media that we should know about, Mr. Dax Khan?
Well, he has something. Well, first to the Mercedo Gesta fight, I thought he looked okay against Gilberto Gonzalez, considering he had been off for, you know, quite some time. The fourth round knocked down a little bit more. He was off balance. I do think Gesta lacks the punching power to stay at 135, maybe about against Anthony Corolla after a few wins. But the speed of Linares and the complete package of Garcia would be a little bit too much for him. So Mercedo Gesta, if he's active and he can move down the division, I see him making some noise, and he can claim a world title.
Yeah, well, I liked what I saw with him, to be honest with you. And I also liked, I loved both of the fights. I loved both of the fights. I thought they were entertaining and very well matched. And I think if Golden Boy's series on ESPN continues to deliver those types of matchups, we're all going to benefit from that, fellas.
How can it not? You know, we need more like that. You know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, the smaller venues lately on social media. A lot of fans are going out there asking each other, what was your favorite venue in terms of small venues, not Madison Square Garden, not the MGM Grand, and so on. So, you know, what that tells me is fans are starting to miss these small fight cards.
Yeah, but, you know, to be honest with you, we don't fighters here in the United States. I mean, if you look at, you know, arguably the biggest draw in boxing here in the last decade is Floyd Mayweather. And Floyd Mayweather, you know, he there's been times he doesn't even sell out in the MGM, or if he does, there's only 15,000 people in attendance. So, I mean, I know that's a lot of people. Obviously, he does great with pay-per-views and stuff like that. But over in Europe, live venues, I mean, it's not uncommon to see 40,000, 50,000 fans. I mean, that's what makes those atmospheres so great, guys.
I agree. It's true. It's true. It's that big roar of the crowd right there live.
What is the ticket price difference? Maybe somebody in the chat room can help us out. You know, what is the ticket price difference over there compared to here? Because I think a lot of these places, when you see the price of the ticket, even for these small fight cards, they're wanting $150 for a small local card against people that don't know anybody. That's a lot of money in this time.
No, you make a great point. But, you know, it's all relative on who's fighting, you know, who the drawer is and everything else. Because, you know, you see club shows, you still see tickets for $25, but you're only seating 400 people in there, too. The big fights at the big stadiums, I think the pricing is around the same. I mean, listen, you know, Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao, you know, they're exceptions to the rule, obviously. They draw the bigger bucks. But anyway, we got a lot of good stuff going on. Any final thoughts for me, Dax?
Last two things. One, the cruiserweight fight this weekend between Raiders and Huck. You know, now Bredis he has two of their belts, and he has the WBC and the IBO. I was surprised at how many people this weekend really didn't know anything about that fight going on. You know, that division is moving real quickly right now, and I believe that, you know, after Alexander Usyk should get through his next opponent, and I do believe he's going to get through Hunter, and he's going to do so rather easily. If Bredis and Usyk should meet, that would really make a huge fight in that division, maybe the biggest fight that division's seen in a long time. And with the way that division moves around now, if Marat and Gassiev and Shumanov, and you can even add in the veteran Vlarzak, Lebedev, and Masayev, you get all those guys in there, that division all of a sudden is going to really come alive because, you know, the heavyweight division has slowed down. We only have two or three of those big stars over there. You know, Anthony Joshua, Joseph Parker, Deontay Wilder, and, you know, they're coming kind of stale. Now, one last thing on social media, wrestling. Last night, they had WrestleMania. The Twitter timelines were flooded with boxing people. tweeting about wrestling. That's why boxing is so easy to sell. Goods, and they're going to buy it, and they're going to complain later on. Because when you see all the hardcore boxing fans doing nothing but tweeting about WrestleMania, it kind of reminds me of that guy that goes to the hospital all the time because he has some sort of ache and pain, and he's given sugar water through the IV, and he's told that it's something else, and all of a sudden he feels better. Same thing with boxing fans. They have no idea. All they want is entertainment. They really don't care about the quality. Do they even know what the quality is? I don't think they do.
No. Well, Coach in the chat room was saying that, boxing has become WWE many, many times, and he's right. I mean, it certainly has, and, you know, but I tell you, you know, looking at the glass half full instead of half empty, you know, if these promoters are giving us these kinds of fights like we saw from ESPN on Saturday and previous to that, we've gotten some great matchups, with the fights that we've seen so far this year, matchups that we wanted to see. If it keeps going in the direction that it is, it may separate itself. I mean, what do you think, Sal?
Well, yeah. I mean, we always say the boxing world, I was saying all last year, it's got to reboot itself. It's got to reach a point where we're going to recognize, or the true fight fans are going to demand, you know, the opposition or toughest contenders getting in the ring with each other. So, you know, that's the whole process of weeding out the pretenders and seeing the contenders and, you know, giving the exciting fights. I think like this year, we're off to a great start, and hopefully we'll sustain that till the end of the year, and we'll see boxing get back its high point in notoriety where it's always been.
Yeah, well, what do you think, Dax? What do you think, Dax?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's I was still talking. Just kind of came off there. Hopefully, you know, it does. But we always say one thing is boxing is a business. And you know what? Business always comes first. So wherever the money is made is what they're going to do. So also, like with any business, it's up to the consumer to decide what the quality of standards are. Same thing with boxing. Now, before I go, Joe Calzacchi, Bill, you disappoint me with the things you said about Joe Calzacchi today. Joe Calzacchi didn't duck anybody. You go and you watch the Bernard Hopkins-Joe Calzacchi fight. You listen to what Roy Jones Jr. said on how come he wants the winner. And when they asked him, why didn't you want Calzacchi when you guys were both at super middleweight? I had too much to lose. It wasn't worth it for me at the time. Who ducked who?
Well, you know,
Bill.
you got me there. I don't know, man. He disappointed me in the Super Six, I guess. I don't know. How do you think he's going to do with his comeback?
The Super Six strictly because Joe Calzacchi wasn't there. If Joe Calzacchi was in the Super Six, do you think Andre Ward had been the star? He wasn't beating Joe Calzacchi at that stage in his career. Joe Calzacchi had to move up to 175 because there was nobody left at 168.
I know you love Joe Calzacchi, but what? He didn't want to leave his comfort zone. He fought Jeff Hook, Left Hook Lacy when he didn't have his left hook. He fought B-Hop when B-Hop was, well, I guess you can't say
he was the underdog in the Lacy fight.
What's that?
He was the underdog in the Lacy fight.
I know, because of his past opponents. Listen, I was never a big fan of Calzaghe, and as far as Kessler goes, I just don't know how he's going to that's who I was referring to with the Super Six. I don't know how far he's going to go. What's your thoughts on his comeback announcement?
Yeah, I said that last Friday. Bad idea.
Yeah, I agree with you. I wouldn't have thought he needed money. I mean, when I asked Sal, I mean, what a difference in the way teams are. He says, I got a great team behind me, a therapist, a food guy, a this or that. I mean, come on, man.
It used to be two guys.
I know.
Cut man and your trainer.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. That's the old
exactly. Team. You had the cut man. You had a cut man who carried the water bucket for you. You had your trainer and you. That was it. I got a therapist? I could see a nutritionist. You know, I could see a trainer. You know, I could even see a cut man, but a therapist? Come on, man. Have we become that weak?
Well, not only that. You know, whoa. Let me ask you this, though, because was it a physical therapist or a mental therapist? Hey, You know, there's different therapeutic professionals out there.
Hey, Dax, you know what they're going to ask for next? They're going to say, listen, in addition to my team, I have a therapeutic dog. Can I bring him to the ring, too?
Oh, boy.
If you need any of them, if you need a physical therapist, if you need a mental therapist, you know something, you shouldn't be fighting.
You should
obviously
be fighting.
We don't need, but obviously,
you're
it's
right.
Time to find something else to do. Save the money.
Dax,
and use that to support yourself instead of paying the therapist.
I like that. I like that. Good idea.
No doubt.
Very well
hey,
put.
Dax, give me a shout after the show, and we'll tighten up some of the things that we experienced today. But all looks good, my man. I knew that. These couple of changes that we did were going to help us out. So I'm glad you took a shower this morning, Dax.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. But last thing before I go, Andre Ward doesn't leave Oakland. Floyd Mayweather doesn't leave Vegas. We talk about the money. Joe Calzacchi was packing those huge arenas that we talk about with all that. You know, he was packing. He was the money. Why should he leave? Mayweather, on your own account, hasn't packed the MGM Grand. Andre Ward, he's not able to pack his own living room.
this is 100% true. Andre Ward, let's not even talk about Andre Ward in the same breath of Mayweather. And the reason why I say that about Mayweather is, yeah, he might not pack the MGM to capacity, but he does sell a million pay-per-views, you know. So, I mean, that's a big difference between us here in the States and overseas. They like to go out and go to an event. Us fat bastards here in the U.S. like to sit home and watch it on the couch. That's what the bottom line is.
This is true, but you know, such is, as they say on social media, boxing.
All right, my man Dax, great job as usual, and we'll be looking forward to you next time, my man.
All right, everybody, and I'll talk to you this weekend.
All right, that was Dax Khan, and he did a great thing today. We finally got our full-blown whole little shtick going here, Sal. I mean, looked good, don't you think?
I think it was great seeing Dax up there. The only one I couldn't see was you, but you see both of us, so that's good.
Yeah, well,
it's like the gauntlet, the little triangle.
Well, it's gonna get better and better, trust me.
I understand.
Wait till we have everybody on at the same time. And next show, I will make sure that my shot is the same size as you guys. I want my thing to be as big as your thing, Sal.
I know you do. Easy.
All right. Hey, listen. On this day in boxing history, April 3rd, in 1998, Freddie Norwood wins a 12-round decision over Antonio Cermeño. To win the WBA featherweight title, took place in Puerto Rico on this day in 1976. Rigoberto Riscau knocks out Warringrung Nakayama in the 10th round to win the newly created WBC World Junior Featherweight title, took place in Panama City. In this day in 1970, Nicolino Loche wins the WBA World Junior Welterweight title via a 10-round decision over Martin Juarez in a non-title fight. Actually, he won a 10-round fight. He was the world champion. This fight was a non-title fight in Argentina. Can't even read my own writing. On this day in 1988, Virgil Hill knocks out Jean-Marie Mbidi in the 11th round to retain his WBA World Light Heavyweight title, place in North Dakota. And on this day, April 3rd in 1992, Greg Haugen knocks out one of my favorite all-time fighters. He's currently got inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame last year. He knocks out Ray Boom Boom Mancini in the 7th round to win the vacant NABF Junior Welterweight title, and that took place in Reno, Nevada on this day in 1992. Any final thoughts, Sal Rocky Senicola?
No, Bill, I think we covered all we had in the media and news today for boxing. But thank you, and it's great to see the program coming together the way it is. Great work.
Well, we've been working hard on it, investing a lot of time, money, and other things in it. And hopefully we're in our last stretch here, and we will have the final stuff tightened up by the end of this week to kick off on the new networks next week. So we'll be looking forward to that. Listen, make sure you tune in Next time, same bat time, same bat channel. Until then, I'll leave you with this. Ciao, baby.
That's my cue.